Maybe they went away.
Maybe. Luke sounded doubtful. They were on the expressway now, speeding towards Simon's neighborhood. Keep him on the phone anyway.
What are you doing now, Simon?
Nothing. I've shoved everything in the room against the door. Now I'm trying to get Eusarion out from behind the heating vent.
Leave him where he is.
This is all going to be very hard to explain to my mom, Simon said, and the phone went dead. There was a click and then nothing. Call disconnected flashed on the digital display.
No, no!
Clary hit the redial button, her fingers trembling. Simon picked up immediately. Sorry, Eusarion scratched me and I dropped the phone.
Her throat burned with relief. That's fine, just as long as you're still okay and...
A noise like a tidal wave crashed through the phone, obliterating Simon's voice. She yanked the phone away from her ear. The display still read, call connected.
Simon! She screamed into the phone. Simon, can you hear me?
The crashing noise stopped. There was the sound of something shattering and a high, unearthly yowl.
Eusarion?
Then the sound of something heavy striking the ground.
Simon?
She whispered. There was a click and then a drawling, amused voice spoke in her ear. Clarissa, it said. I should have known you'd be on the other end of this phone line. She squeezed her eyes shut, her stomach falling out from under her as if she were on a roller coaster that had just made its first drop.
Valentine.
You mean father, he said, sounding genuinely annoyed. I deplore this modern habit of calling one's parents by their first names. What I actually want to call you is a hell of a lot more unprintable than your name, she snapped.
Where's Simon?
You mean the vampire boy? Questionable company for a shadow hunter girl of good family, don't you think? From now on, I'll be expecting to have a say in your choice of friends.
What did you do to Simon?
Nothing, said Valentine, amused. Yet. And he hung up.
By the time Alec came back into the training room, Jace was lying on the floor, envisioning lines of dancing girls in an effort to ignore the pain in his wrists. It wasn't working.
What are you doing? Alec asked, kneeling down as close to the shimmering wall of the prison as he could get.
Jace tried to remind himself that when Alec asked this sort of question, he really meant it, and that it was something he had once found endearing rather than annoying. He failed.
I thought I'd lie on the floor and writhe in pain for a while, he grunted. It relaxes me.
It does?
Oh, you're being sarcastic. That's a good sign, probably, Alec said. If you can sit up, you might want to. I'm going to try to slide something through the wall.
Jay sat up so quickly that his head spun.
Alec, don't.
But Alec had already moved to push something toward him with both hands, as if he were rolling a ball to a child. A red sphere broke through the shimmering curtain and rolled to Jace, bumping gently against his knee.
An apple. He picked it up with some difficulty. How appropriate.
I thought you might be hungry.
I am.
Jace took a bite of the apple. Juice ran down his hands and sizzled in the blue flames that cuffed his wrists.
Did you text Clary?
No. Isabel won't let me into her room. She just throws things against the door and screams. She said if I came in, she'd jump out the window. She'd do it, too.
Probably.
I get the feeling, Alec said and smiled. She hasn't forgiven me for betraying you as she sees it.
Good girl, said Jace with appreciation.
I didn't betray you, idiot.
It's the thought that counts.
Good. Because I brought you something else, too. I don't know if it'll work, but it's worth a try. He slid something small and metallic through the wall. It was a silvery disc about the size of a quarter. Jay set the apple aside and picked the disc up curiously.
What's this?
I got it off the desk in the library. I've seen my parents use it before to take off restraints. I think it's an unlocking rune. It's worth trying. He broke off as Jace touched the disc to his wrists, holding it awkwardly between two fingers. The moment it touched the line of blue flame, the cuff flickered and vanished.
Thanks.
Jace rubbed his wrists, each one braceleted with a line of chafed, bleeding skin. He was starting to be able to feel his fingertips again.
It's not a file hidden in a birthday cake, but it'll keep my hands from falling off.
Alec looked at him. The wavering lines of the rain curtain made his face look elongated, worried. Or maybe he was worried.
You know, Something occurred to me when I was talking to Isabel earlier. I told her she couldn't jump out the window, and not to try or she'd get herself killed. Jace nodded.
Sound big brotherly advice.
But then I started wondering if that was true in your case. I mean, I've seen you do things that were practically flying. I've seen you fall 3 stories and land like a cat, jump from the ground to a roof.
Hearing my achievements recited is certainly gratifying, but I'm not sure what your point is, Alec.
My point is that there are 4 walls to this prison, not 5. Jace stared at him.
So Hodge wasn't lying when he said we'd actually use geometry in our daily lives.
You're right, Alec. There are 4 walls to this cage. Now, if the Inquisitor had gone with 2, I might...
Jace, Alec said, losing patience.
I mean, there's no top to the cage. Nothing between you and the ceiling. Jace craned his head back. The rafters seemed to sway dizzily high above him, lost in shadow.
You're crazy.
Maybe, Alec said. Maybe I just know what you can do. He shrugged.
You could try, at least.
Jace looked at Alec, at his open, honest face and steady blue eyes.
He is crazy, Jace thought.
It was true. In the heat of fighting, he'd done some amazing things, but so had they all. Shadowhunter blood, years of training, but he couldn't jump 30 feet straight up into the air.
How do you know you can't? Said a soft voice in his head. If you've never tried it.
Clary's voice. He thought of her and her runes, of the silent city and the handcuff popping off his wrist as if it had cracked under some enormous pressure. He and Clary shared the same blood. If Clary could do things that shouldn't be possible. He got to his feet, almost reluctantly, and looked around, taking slow stock of the room. He could still see the floor-length mirrors and the multitude of weapons hanging on the walls, their blades glinting dully through the curtain of silver fire that surrounded him. He bent and retrieved the half-eaten apple off the floor, looked at it for a thoughtful moment, then cocked his arm back and threw it as hard as he could. The apple sailed through the air, hit a shimmering silver wall, and burst into a corona of molten blue flame. Jace heard Alec gasp, so the Inquisitor hadn't been exaggerating. If he hit one of the prison walls too hard, he'd die. Alec was on his feet, suddenly wavering. Jace, I don't know.
Shut up, Alec, and don't watch me. It's not helping.
Whatever Alec said in response, Jace didn't hear it. He was doing a slow pivot in place, his eyes focused on the rafters. The runes that gave him excellent long sight kicked in, the rafters coming into better focus. He could see their chipped edges, their whorls and knots, the black stains of age. But they were solid. They'd held up the Institute roof for hundreds of years. They could hold a teenage boy. He flexed his fingers, taking deep, slow, controlled breaths, just as his father had taught him. In his mind's eye, he saw himself leaping, soaring, catching hold of a rafter with ease and swinging himself up onto it. He was light, he told himself, light as an arrow, winging its way easily through the air, swift and unstoppable. It would be easy, he told himself. Easy.
I am Valentine's arrow, Jace whispered, whether he knows it or not.
And he jumped.
Chapter 16. A Stone of the Heart. Clary hit the button to call Simon back, but the phone went straight to voicemail. Hot tears splashed down her cheeks, and she threw her own phone at the dashboard.
Damn it! Damn it!
We're almost there, Luke said.
They'd gotten off the expressway, and she hadn't even noticed. They pulled up in front of Simon's house, a wooden one-family whose front was painted a cheerful red. Clary was out of the car and running up the front walk before Luke had even yanked on the security brake. She could hear him yelling her name as she dashed up the steps and pounded frantically on the front door.
Simon? She shouted. Simon!
Clary, enough.
Luke caught up to her on the front porch.
The neighbors.
Screw the neighbors.
She fumbled for the key ring on her belt, found the right key, and slid it into the lock. She swung the door open and stepped warily into the hallway, Luke just behind her. They peered through the first door on the left into the kitchen. Everything looked exactly as it always had, from the meticulously clean counter to the fridge magnets. There was the sink where she'd kissed Simon just a few days ago, Sunshine streamed in through the windows, filling the room with pale yellow light. Light that was capable of charring Simon away to ashes. Simon's room was the last one at the end of the hall. The door stood slightly open, though Clary could see nothing but darkness through the crack. She slid her stele out of her pocket and gripped it tightly. She knew it wasn't really a weapon, but the feel of it in her hand was calming. Inside, the room was dark, black curtains drawn across the windows, the only light coming from the digital clock on the bedside table. Luke was reaching across her to flip on the light when something that hissed and spit and snarled like a demon, launched itself at him out of the darkness. Clary screamed as Luke seized her shoulders and pushed her roughly aside. She stumbled and nearly fell. When she righted herself, she turned to see an astonished-looking Luke holding a yowling, struggling white cat, its fur sticking out all over. It looked like a ball of cotton with claws.
"Yossarian!" Clary exclaimed.
Luke dropped the cat. Yossarian immediately shot between his legs and disappeared down the hall.
"Stupid cat," Clary said.
"It's not his fault. Cats don't like me."
Luke reached for the light switch and flipped it on. Clary gasped. The room was completely in order. Nothing at all out of place, not even the rug askew. Even the coverlet was folded neatly on the bed.
"Is it a glamour?"
"Probably not. Probably just magic."
Luke moved into the center of the room, looking around him thoughtfully. As he moved to pull one of the curtains aside, Clary saw something gleam in the carpet at his feet.
"Luke, wait."
She went to where he was standing and knelt to retrieve the object. It was Simon's silver cell phone, badly bent out of shape, the antenna snapped off. Heart pounding, she flipped the phone open. Despite the crack that ran the length of the display screen, a single text message was still visible.
"Now I have them all."
Clary sank down on the bed in a daze. Distantly, she felt Luke pluck the phone out of her hand. She heard him suck in his breath as he read the message.
"What does that mean?
Now I have them all?" asked Clary.
Luke set Simon's phone down on the desk and passed a hand over his face.
"I'm afraid it means that now he has Simon, and we might as well face it, Maya too. It means he has everything he needs for the ritual of conversion."
Clary stared at him.
"You mean this isn't just about getting at me and you?"
"I'm sure Valentine regards that as a pleasant side effect, but it's not his main goal. His main goal is to reverse the characteristics of the Soul Sword, and for that he needs
the blood of Downworlder children. But Maya and Simon aren't children, they're teenagers."
"When that spell was created, the spell to turn the Soul Sword to darkness, the word teenager hadn't even been invented. In Shadowhunter society, you're an adult when you're 18. Before that, you're a child. For Valentine's purposes, Maya and Simon are children. He has the blood of a fairy child already, and the blood of a warlock child. All he needed was a werewolf and a vampire."
Clary felt as if the air had been punched out of her.
"Then why didn't we do something? Why didn't we think of protecting them somehow?"
"So far, Valentine has done what's convenient. None of his victims were chosen for any other reason than that they were there and available. The warlock was easy to find. All Valentine had to do was hire him under the pretense of wanting a demon raised. It's simple enough to spot fairies in the park if you know where to look. And the Hunter's Moon is exactly where you'd go if you wanted to find a werewolf. Putting himself to this extra danger and trouble just to strike out at us when nothing's changed."
"Jace," said Clary.
"What do you mean, Jace? What about him?"
"I think it's Jace he's trying to get back at. Jace must have done something last night on the boat. Something that really pissed Valentine off. Pissed him off enough to abandon whatever plan he had before and make a new one."
Luke looked baffled.
"What makes you think that Valentine's change of plans had anything to do with your brother?"
"Because," Clary said with grim certainty, "only Jace can piss someone off that much."
"Isabel!"
Alec pounded on his sister's door.
"Isabel, open the door. I know you're in there."
The door opened a crack. Alec tried to peer through it, but no one appeared to be on the other side.
"She doesn't want to talk to you," said a well-known voice.
Alec glanced down and saw gray eyes glaring at him from behind a bent pair of spectacles.
Max, he said. Come on, little brother, let me in. I don't want to talk to you either.
Max started to push the door shut, but Alec, quick as a flick of Isabel's whip, wedged his foot into the gap.
Don't make me knock you over, Max.
You wouldn't.
Max pushed back with all his might.
No, but I might go get our parents, and I have a feeling Isabel doesn't want that. Do you, Izzy?
He demanded, pitching his voice loud enough for his sister inside the room to hear.
Oh, for God's sake!
Isabel sounded furious.
All right, Max, let him in.
Max stepped away, and Alec pushed his way in, letting the door swing half shut behind him. Isabel was kneeling in the embrasure of the window beside her bed, her gold whip coiled around her left arm. She was wearing her hunting gear, the tough black trousers and skin-tight shirt with their silvery, near-invisible design of runes. Her boots were buckled up to her knees, and her black hair whipped in the breeze from the open window. She glared at him, reminding him for a moment of nothing more than Hugo, Hodge's black raven.
What the hell are you doing, trying to get yourself killed?
He demanded, striding furiously across the room toward his sister. Her whip snaked out, coiling around his ankles. Alec stopped dead, knowing that with a single flick of her wrist, Isabel could jerk him off his feet and land him in a trussed bundle on the hardwood floor.
Don't come any closer to me, Alexander Lightwood, she said in her angriest voice. I'm not feeling very charitable toward you at the moment.
Isabel,
how could you just turn on Jace like that, after all that he's been through, and you swore that oath to watch out for each other, too?
Not, he reminded her, if it meant breaking the law.
The law? Isabel snapped in disgust. There's a higher law than the Clave, Alec. The law of family. Jace is your family.
The law of family? I've never heard of that before, Alec said, nettled.
He knew he ought to be defending himself, but it was hard not to be distracted by the lifelong habit of correcting one's younger siblings when they were wrong.
Could that be because you just made it up?
Isabel flicked her wrist. Alec felt his feet go out from under him and twisted to absorb the impact of falling with his hands and wrists. He landed, rolled onto his back, and looked up to see Isabel looming over him. Max was beside her.
What should we do with him, Maxwell? Isabel asked. Leave him tied up here for the parents to find?
Alec had had enough. He whipped a blade from the sheath at his wrist, twisted, and slashed it through the whip around his ankles. The electrum wire parted with a snap, and he sprang to his feet as Isabel drew her arm back, the wire hissing around her. A low chuckle broke the tension.
All right, you've tortured him enough. I'm here.
Isabel's eyes flew wide.
Jace?
The same.
Jace ducked into Isabel's room, shutting the door behind him.
No need for the two of you to fight.
He winced as Max careened into him, yelping his name.
Careful there, he said, gently disentangling the boy. I'm not in the best shape right now.
I can see that, Isabel said, her eyes raking him anxiously.
His wrists were bloody. His fair hair was plastered sweatily to his neck and forehead, and his face and hands were stained with dirt and ichor.
Did the Inquisitor hurt you?
Not too badly.
Jace's eyes met Alec's across the room.
She just locked me up in the weapons gallery. Alec helped get me out.
The whip drooped in Isabel's hand like a flower.
Alec, is that true?
Yes.
Alec brushed dust from the floor off his clothes with deliberate ostentation. He couldn't resist adding,
so there.
Well, you should have said.
And you should have had some faith in me. Enough, there's no time for bickering, Jay said. Isabel, what kind of weapons do you have in here? And bandages, any bandages?
Bandages?
Isabel set her whip down and took her stele out of a drawer.
I can fix you up with an aratze.
Jace raised his wrists.
An aratze would be good for my bruises, but it won't help these. These are rune burns.
They looked even worse in the bright light of Isabel's room. The circular scars were black and cracked in places, oozing blood and clear fluid. He lowered his hands as Isabel paled.
And I'll need some weapons, too, before I...
Bandages first, weapons later.
She set her whip down on top of the dresser and herded Jace into the bathroom with a basket full of ointments, gauze pads, and bandage strips. Alec watched them through the half-open door, Jace leaning against the sink as his adoptive sister sponged his wrists and wrapped them in white gauze. Okay, now take your shirt off.
I knew there was something in this for you.
Jace slid off his jacket and drew his t-shirt over his head, wincing. His skin was pale gold, layered over hard muscle. Black ink marks twined his slim arms. A mundane might have thought the white scars that snowflaked Jace's skin, remnants of old runes, made him less than perfect. But Alec didn't. They all had those scars. They were badges of honor, not flaws. Jace, seeing Alec watching him through the half-open door, said,
Alec, can you get the phone?
It's on the dresser.
Isabel didn't look up.
She and Jace were conversing in low tones. Alec couldn't hear them, but suspected this was because they were trying not to scare Max.
Alec looked. It's not on the dresser.
Isabel, tracing an erratze on Jace's back, swore in annoyance.
Oh, hell. I left my phone in the kitchen.
Crap. I don't want to go looking for it in case the Inquisitor's around.
I'll get it, Max offered. She doesn't care about me. I'm too young.
I suppose. Isabel sounded reluctant.
What do you need the phone for, Alec?
We just need it, Alec said impatiently.
Izzy.
If you're texting Magnus to say, I think you're cool, I'm gonna kill you.
Who's Magnus? Max inquired.
He's a warlock, said Alec.
A sexy, sexy warlock, Isabel told Max, ignoring Alec's look of total fury. But warlocks are bad, protested Max, looking baffled.
Exactly, said Isabel.
I don't understand, said Max, but I'm going to get the phone. I'll be right back.
He slipped out the door as Jace pulled his shirt and jacket back on and came into the bedroom, where he commenced looking for weapons in the piles of Isabel's belongings that were strewn around the floor. Isabel followed him, shaking her head.
What's the plan now? Are we all leaving?
The Inquisitor's going to freak when she finds out you're not there anymore.
Not as much as she'll freak when Valentine turns her down.
Tersely, Jace outlined the Inquisitor's plan.
The only problem is he'll never go for it.
The only problem?
Isabel was so furious she was almost stuttering, something she hadn't done since she was 6.
She can't do that. She can't just trade you away to a psychopath. You're a member of the Clave. You're our brother.
The Inquisitor doesn't think so.
I don't care what she thinks. She's a hideous bitch, and she has got to be stopped.
Once she finds out her plan is seriously flawed, she might be able to be talked down, Jace observed. But I'm not sticking around to find out. I'm getting out of here.
It's not going to be easy, Alec said. The Inquisitor's got this place locked up tighter than a pentagram. You know there are guards downstairs? She's called in half the conclave.
She must think highly of me, said Jace, tossing aside a pile of magazines.
Maybe she's not wrong. Isabel looked at him thoughtfully. Did you seriously jump 30 feet out of a Malachi configuration? Did he, Alec?
He did, Alec confirmed. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like this.
Jace lifted a 10-inch dagger from the floor. One of Isabel's pink brassieres was speared on the wickedly sharp tip. Isabel snatched it off, scowling.
That's not the point. How did you do it? Do you know?
I jumped.
Jace pulled 2 razor-edge spinning discs out from under the bed. They were covered in gray cat hair. He blew on them, scattering fur.
Chakrams. Cool. Especially if I meet any demons with serious dander allergies.
Isabel thwacked him with the bra.
You're not answering me.
Because I don't know, Izzy.
Jace scrambled to his feet.
Maybe the Sealy Queen was right. Maybe I have powers I don't even know about because I've never tested them. Clary certainly does.
Isabel wrinkled her forehead.
She does?
Alec's eyes widened suddenly. Jace, is that vampire cycle of yours still up on the roof?
Possibly, but it's daylight, so it's not much use.
Besides, Isabel pointed out, we can't all fit on it.
Jace slid the chakrams onto his belt, along with the 10-inch dagger. Several angel blades went into his jacket pockets.
That doesn't matter, he said. You're not coming with me.
Isabel spluttered.
What do you mean we're not?
She broke off as Max returned, out of breath and clutching her battered pink phone.
Max, you're a hero.
She snatched the phone from him, shooting a glare at Jace.
I'll get back to you in a minute.
Meanwhile, who are we calling? Clary?
I'll call her, Alec began.
No.
Isabel batted his hand away. She likes me better. She was already dialing. She stuck her tongue out as she held the phone up to her ear.
Clary? It's Isabel. What?
The color in her face vanished as if it had been wiped away, leaving her gray and staring.
How is that possible? But why?
How is what possible?
Jace was at her side in two strides.
Isabel, what's happened? Is Clary...
Isabel drew the phone away from her ear, her knuckles white.
It's Valentine. He's taken Simon and Maya. He's going to use them to perform the ritual.
In one smooth motion, Jace reached over and plucked the phone out of Isabel's hand. He put it to his ear.
Drive to the Institute, he said. Don't come in. Wait for me. I'll meet you outside.
He snapped the phone shut and handed it to Alec.
Call Magnus, he said. Tell him to meet us down by the waterfront in Brooklyn. He can pick the place, but it should be somewhere deserted. We're going to need his help getting to Valentine's ship.
We?
Isabel perked up visibly.
Magnus, Luke, and myself, Jace clarified. You two are staying here and dealing with the Inquisitor for me. When Valentine doesn't come through with his part of her deal, you're the ones who are going to have to convince her to send all the backup the Conclave has got after Valentine.
I don't get it, Alec said. How do you plan to get out of here in the first place? Jace grinned.
Watch, he said,
and jumped up onto Isabel's windowsill. Isabel cried out, but Jace was already ducking through the window opening. He balanced for a moment on the sill outside, and then he was gone. Alec raced to the window and stared out in horror, but there was nothing to see. Just the garden of the Institute far below, brown and empty, and the narrow path that led up to the front door. There were no screaming pedestrians on 96th Street. No cars pulled over at the sight of a falling body. It was as if Jace had vanished into thin air. The sound of water woke him. It was a heavy, repetitive sound. Water sloshing against something solid, over and over, as if he were lying in the bottom of a pool that was rapidly draining and refilling itself. There was the taste of metal in his mouth and the smell of metal all around. He was conscious of a nagging, persistent pain in his left hand. With a groan, Simon opened his eyes. He was lying on a hard, bumpy metal floor painted an ugly gray-green. The walls were the same green metal. There was a single high round window in one wall, letting in only a little sunlight, but it was enough. He'd been lying with his hand in a patch of it, and his fingers were red and blistered. With another groan, he rolled away from the light and sat up, and realized he wasn't alone in the room. Though the shadows were thick, he could see in the dark just fine. Across from him, her hands bound together and chained to a large steam pipe, was Maya. Her clothes were torn, and there was a massive bruise across her left cheek. He could see where her braids had been torn away from her scalp on one side, her hair matted with blood. The moment he sat up, she stared at him and burst immediately into tears.
I thought, she hiccuped between sobs, that you were dead.
I am dead, Simon said.
He was staring at his hand. As he watched, the blisters faded, the pain lessening, the skin resuming its normal pallor.
I know, but I meant really dead.
She swiped at her face with her bound hands. Simon tried to move toward her, but something brought him up short. A metal cuff around his ankle was attached to a thick metal chain sunk into the floor. Valentine was taking no chances.
Don't cry, he said, and immediately regretted it. It wasn't as if the situation didn't warrant tears. I'm fine.
For now, said Maya, rubbing her wet face against her sleeve. That man, the one with the white hair, his name is Valentine?
You saw him? Simon said. I didn't see anything, just my front door blowing in and then a massive shape that came at me like a freight train.
He's the Valentine, right? The one everyone talks about? The one who started the uprising?
He's Jason Clary's father, Simon said. That's what I know about him.
I thought his voice sounded familiar. He sounds just like Jace.
She looked momentarily rueful.
No wonder Jace is such an ass.
Simon could only agree.
So you didn't...
Maya's voice trailed off. She tried again.
Look, I know this sounds weird, but when Valentine came for you,
Did you see someone you recognized?